This first session, Chauncey's going to do most of the talking.
Yes.
And I'll chip in, but she's going to lead the discussion, and then we'll flip it the next
Especially
half.
Talking about the correct. Men, because so that's what we're talking about.
Don't think that she's doing all the talking and not letting me talk. It's just the way that we've worked it out. So.
Yeah, exactly. So one of the most important factors that I need to say right up front is that when we're talking about understanding men and women, sometimes people can get a little tense around this topic. It's really, really important to note a couple of things. First is that we're making generalizations based on the research studies that we've done. But there are always exceptions. So, for example, if 80% of women said one way, 20% didn't, right? Like, everybody is an individual. So the key is using this truly as a starting point in order to have these conversations together and be like, does that matter to you? And sometimes it'll be yes and sometimes it'll be no. It's just to get you started. So the second thing, though, is that in certain types of relationships, we're going to be giving you some application ideas. We're going to be sharing all the stuff we learned in the research. But like we said last night, this is presuming, as the vast majority of relationships are, that there is goodwill, even if you are in a very difficult place in your relationship. Like we said, almost 100%, even in difficult relationships, they really do care about each other. May not believe that they care. The other person may not believe that you care about me, but you probably do really care about each other. When it has gotten into a point where there's a lot of control or it's gotten into some abusive dynamics, at that point, the application of these things is going to be very different. Like I said, really small percentage, but that's where we would encourage, go talk to a pastor, talk to a counselor, figure out the actual application. So that is beyond the scope of what we can talk about in this session. But let's dive in to the most important thing for you to know about understanding the other person. One of the key factors that we found running under the surface in any survey that we have done that has looked into this men and women thing is that one of the main factors that causes the arguments and the heartaches and the hurt feelings and irritation and frustration and even just confusion is that men and women tend to have two very different sets of insecurities running under the surface. Let me say that again. Men and women tend, not always, but tend to have two different sets of primary insecurities running under the surface. What that means by definition is that something different is going to hurt your spouse's feelings than would hurt yours. And it's almost like these insecurities, these worries, these fears, whatever they, however you call it, it's almost like a raw nerve. And you're hitting that nerve in your spouse without having any idea that that's what you're doing. Remember last night, I said that what we're going to be doing this weekend in this marriage event is all about trying hard in the right areas instead of trying hard and actually hurting each other without intending to.
And so what you're saying there is that if you can try hard in the right areas by understanding that insecurity that may be in your spouse, it provides an opportunity that if you can meet that need,
yep,
if you can lessen that worry, fear, heartache, whatever
speak
it is,
into it,
you have a great opportunity of building them up and building up your marriage as a result.
Yeah.
So, you know, I just, this stuff is, we love this stuff and we stumbled on it.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is where, if you sign up for the For Couples Only study, you'll go into more of this and the application and your relationship, and you'll hear some of the same data and the same information as what we're sharing today, because there's a lot of crossover in that, because it's the For Women Only and For Men Only. It's based on the For Women Only and For Men Only studies.
We got a Q&A question,
yeah,
which was, how'd you guys get into this? And I just said that we kind of stumbled into it. Why don't
do you want me just to share it briefly?
Briefly?
Sure. Absolutely.
I think it's illustrative of what we're going to be talking about.
Absolutely. When we say we stumbled into this, we really, truly did. So when we graduated from Harvard with David and worked in New York, and Jeff and David were roommates in New York, you're hearing a trend here, right? And then we got married. I moved to New York and started working on Wall Street. Jeff was an attorney at a big law firm. And that was what we built this sort of analytical skill set. We had no idea that God would be using it in a completely different way down the road. A number of years later, when we moved to Atlanta, which is where we live today.
Following David.
Because of David. Because
there's a trend.
We ended up, it's sort of a long story, but we ended up having an opportunity. I had an opportunity to write a couple of novels. And one of the main characters in the novel that I was writing was a man. And I realized I didn't know how to put thoughts in his head, right? Like, I couldn't just say what my main character was doing. I had to say what this man was thinking. And I'm like, I don't know. Like, I don't know what a guy would be thinking, right? And so, and I was putting this person in some pretty personal situations. And so this whole thing started because I would ask Jeff or David, or we'd be out to dinner with another couple, and I'd go to the other husband and I'd be like, can I interview you? And I'd describe the scene that I was putting my character in, and I would say, here's the scene. What would you be thinking if this was you in this situation? And I'll tell the women in the room, as these men started telling me what they'd actually be thinking, half the time I was like, seriously? Like, I found myself so shocked, honestly, at some of the things they were saying. And so I started having more and more and more of these conversations. Bottom line is that I started to realize eventually that, wait a minute, what I'm hearing, it's not just that it's surprising. Like, that was kind of interesting. Like, wow, really? You know? And then I started to realize, wait a minute, there is something much more important going on. Because what I started to hear, I started to realize what I was hearing from the men, it wasn't like stuff that happened like off in a corner, it came up once every couple of months. The stuff I was hearing were these things that these men were describing that they thought and they felt every single day, like multiple times a day. And at that point, we'd been married maybe 8 years, something like that. And I'm like, why haven't I heard this before? And so that is when I think that analyst hat went on. And long story, but God made a way for us to do this big nationally representative survey of men. And that became the book For Women Only, which just exploded. And now, I mean, I think this has sold almost 2 million copies, this book alone, and it's in like 25 languages or something. But it pushed us into, okay, then we need to do For Men Only and understand women and do a study of women, and then some about teenagers and parenting and the workplace, and now, like I said, mental health. And so it pushed us into this research space. So is that what you wanted me
That's
to?
That's what I wanted
okay.
to say.
All right. So let me dive in to a big picture, the differences between men and women, to get us started on this whole idea of the insecurities. Let me just share an example. So we, early on, we were doing a series of focus groups. And because we always do interviews and focus groups and the big national surveys, we do both because you hear all the stories and all that kind of stuff when you're actually talking to people individually. So we were doing a series of focus groups, and this particular two focus groups back to back, the first night was college age young men, so like 20, 21 years old. And then the second night was college age young women, okay? And we were, You know those conference rooms where you have the big conference table and then the whiteboards on the walls that have those doors that close? You know what I'm talking about? So picture that. We had a couple of those. And so the first night was with the guys, and I opened up this whiteboard. And I told the guys I wanted to do something a little bit different. In this particular focus group, I'm like, I kind of want to chart what it feels like to be a guy. Like, can you help me chart that on this? And so the way we did it, sort of like emotionally, your inner life kind of stuff, we divided the whiteboard in half. And on the left-hand side, it was like, what are the things that you're like fears and insecurities and worries? Like if someone says this or they do that, that it doesn't feel so good, right? Like the things that hurt your feelings, basically. And then on the right-hand side, what is it that feels great? What lights you up? Kind of what are your needs and your desires? Like what are the things that if they say this or they do that, that it like feels fantastic? So we spent all night on it. And they told me what to write and erase, and we got it, in their words, just perfect. And then at the end of the night, I looked at my watch. I was like, oh my gosh, we are way over time. The girls are going to be in here tomorrow night. We don't have time to erase this whole big thing, so I just closed those doors. So the next night, I'm in there with the girls, and I open up this whiteboard on the wall, and I say the same thing. Let's chart your fears and your needs as women. And this one young woman raises her hand and she interrupts me. And she says, excuse me, but I really object to this language. And I'm like, oh, okay. And she said, look, it is not our fears and our needs as women. We're all just people. And we have the same fears and the same needs as people. And I said, okay, totally fine. Let's chart your fears and your needs as people. And so we spent all night on it, and they told me what to write and erase, and in their words, got it just perfect. And then at the end of the night, I specifically left 5 minutes. You knew what I was going to do, right? And I said, you know, the guys were in here last night. Does anybody want to see? And of course, these college-age young women are like, yes, you know. So I opened up this whiteboard, and then I just stood back, and I watched their faces. And it was hilarious because their like eyes were getting big and their heads are swiveling back and forth as they were trying to process what they were seeing, because there was not one word the same. Not one. Except for, you know, and, the, right? Not one. So what was on the board? So here is what... Oh, hold on. I'll show you a slide in a second so that you can take a picture or whatever if you want. But let me just describe for you briefly what was on the board. So it turns out that, and this is about, by the way, as we've done the studies, this is about 75 to 85% of women, depending on the survey and how we ask the question, whatever, this is relevant, from age 15 to 75. We've done the surveys age 15 to 75. Same thing on the guy's side, about age 15 to 75, about 75 to 85% of men. Again, not 100, okay? Not 100%. So for most women, the question, the insecurity, the worry in the heart, you could kind of summarize it as, am I lovable? The question is, am I special? Am I beautiful? Am I worthy of being loved for who I am on the inside? That's running under the surface. Again, not 100%, but 75 to 85% of women, depending on how we ask the question. And so because of that, am I lovable question, the need that comes from that is we love to feel loved, right? We love to feel cherished. We love to feel adored. Now, for the boys and later as men, they're kind of like, feeling loved is nice, but it didn't make it on the board. And for, again, 75 to 85% of men, the question isn't, am I lovable? The question is, am I able? Am I adequate? Do I measure up? Do I have what it takes? Am I any good at what I do on the outside? Now, think about how different that is. For women, Am I worthy of being loved for who I am on the inside? For a guy, am I any good at what I do on the outside? Totally different. And it lends itself to a totally different set of primary needs. So this one factor, if we think of these differences between men and women, again, it's not going to be 100%, but it is highly likely that what is happening in your marriage, if you are hurt, if you're frustrated, if you're confused, if you're like, why do we always argue? If you're starting to pull apart because it's just so painful, it is highly likely that it is, without intending to, you are trying hard and you are hurting each other's feelings without having any idea, because your spouse has a different set of primary insecurities than you do. So, like I said, for women, this is the summary. For men, this is the summary. Am I able? Am I adequate? So, diving in to the understanding men sort of pattern, like, what does that look like? Everybody got that? Okay. So this is what we're going to spend the next, 45 minutes or so on before we go into the break and then the understanding women. So for the vast majority of men, because we're talking about a completely different creature, like I said, we women, we want to feel loved and cherished and adored. That's what lights us up. That is kind of, ladies, that's kind of what we think is the whole point of having the relationship, right? Like, if you're not going to feel loved, what's the point? And it's this huge surprise to find out that for most men, that's not the point at all. And that 74% of men on our nationally representative survey said if they had to make a choice, and by the way, I need to say this out loud, we forced them into this choice. They would never in real life have to make this choice. But we forced them into this choice between these two bad things. And they said, 74% of men said, if I have to make a choice, I will choose to give up feeling that my wife or my girlfriend loves me. I will give that up if I could just feel that she appreciates me, that she respects me, that she believes in me, that she trusts me, that she admires me. And all of those things are far more important to the average man, even than feeling that his wife loves him.
And the fact is that it's kind of all a big ball of twine or wax or whatever.
Yes, it is.
It's all mixed up in all of our minds, a lot of these things. And for a guy, he would probably say, well, if I don't feel that my wife admires me, appreciates me, she couldn't possibly love me.
Yes.
So yeah,
to force them into that choice in order to like actually make, because guys are like, those things are the same thing in so many ways. That, like I said, that is a big deal difference though when you actually parse it out. And it gets us as women into so much trouble, because for the average man, it's feeling that his wife appreciates him. And it gets us into so much trouble because we women are really good, usually, at showing love, right? Like, that's something that comes very naturally to most women. I'm going to ask for a show of hands just really briefly. How many women feel, it's not going to be 100%, but for the women in here, how many of you feel that it's easy, for example, when you're talking to your husband or to your children or to a close friend, that the words, I love you, can tend to come out naturally? Just raise your hand if that sort of is a natural thing. Yeah, it's not 100, it's maybe 80% of the women in here. But we tend to naturally say, honey, I love you, and we do things that we hope he'll find to be loving. And at the same stinking time, without realizing it, we might be criticizing him a lot. Or maybe we're questioning his decisions all the time. Or, I don't know, maybe we're telling him what to do every now and then. Okay, you should see the looks on the faces of the men in this room right now. There's so many men who are like, I can't nod. Like, I'll get in trouble if I nod, right? They're vibrating in their seats. But we do these things that we don't realize are sending that message. Like, okay, how many of you, I know it's probably not a huge number, but how many of you have young children? Because I know a lot of people with young children can't get away from marriage. Raise your hands again. I want to see. Okay. So young children, people. So when we had young kids, perfect example, I would be away speaking at a women's conference or something, and Jeff would have the kids, and I would leave him with a list of what to do with like every 5 minutes of the day. And like, remember the play date and the medicine and the this and the that and whatever and the nap and the blah. And I don't realize that what I'm telling him is, no, you're not able. No, you're not adequate. Like, I had no idea that I was sending what's actually kind of a painful message. Or different example, your husband puts the dishes in the dishwasher, you come along behind him and put the dishes in the right way. I think we heard a nerve over there. But we don't realize, we're just like, oh, it's just more efficient to do it this way. We don't realize that what you said, oh, that thing you did on the outside, it wasn't good enough. And it's a painful message. So what we need to know often for understanding men is to actually kind of look at, okay, two main things. What are those things that actually send the painful message so that we can hopefully see it when it happens and avoid it, right? And then what are the things that send a positive message so we can do that more often? And so those two things, if we know those two things, it really, really helps. So let's start with the avoiding the painful message thing. So what is it that sends that painful message? And ladies, I'm going to tell you, it is so crazy simple, but it is so hard to do because, at least at the beginning, because we have habits that have built up that we don't even notice this. And so for the women in the room, the thing that sends a painful message is any little, like, day-to-day thing that tells him, I think what you just did is inadequate. That's it. It says to him, what you just did is inadequate. I think you are inadequate. And we're not, guys, just, you know, we're not sending that message. We don't think we are. That's not what we're trying to say. But it's this little day-to-day stuff. So let me give you an example, because I always learn way better from examples. I think I told this story maybe on the For Couples Only video. I can't remember. Oh. Because I think literally we were just getting ready to film that For Couples Only video. I was flying back home from speaking at a women's event in order to film the videos, which was a few years ago, so less gray hair. And I'm sitting next to the guy. There's a guy sitting next to me on the airplane, and he turns to me and he asks me my favorite question when a guy asks me this question, which is, so what do you do? And like, I always look for every opportunity I can to interview any man I come across, right?
And especially on a plane where he can't get off.
He can't get away, yes. And so this guy on the plane says, so what do you do? And I say, I help women understand men. And the look on his face was like, what are you going to tell him about us? Like, there was this worry, like there was this kind of alarm. And I explained, because literally I had just been speaking at a women's conference on this topic. And so he said, what'd you say? And so I started to share a couple of these things. And as we started talking, his shoulders just kind of slumped. Honestly, he looked a little defeated. And he said a phrase that I had heard in prior years from Jeff so many times, and I had no idea what Jeff was talking about. And I guarantee that some of the women in the room have heard their husband say this phrase and had no idea what he was talking about. And this man said, look, I love my wife, but nothing I do is ever good enough for her. And now because of the research, I thought I knew what he was talking about. And so I said, can you give me an example? He said, absolutely. I will just give you something that happened last night. And he said he and his wife had had friends over for dinner. And after dinner, she had to go out to some sort of a meeting. And he said the kitchen was kind of a wreck. And she said, hey, honey, while I'm gone, can you clean up the kitchen so that when I come home, we can go right to bed? And he said, sure, you know, no problem. And he said, so I cleaned the kitchen. She comes home from her meeting, kisses me on the cheek, looks over my shoulder into the kitchen, goes, huh, and grabs a sponge and starts re-cleaning all the countertops. And he said, it just kills me that nothing I do is ever good enough for her. Okay, now I'm looking at some of the women's faces in the room. And some of the women in the room, some of us are thinking internally the same thing that I was thinking the first, I don't know, dozen times I heard a guy say something like this, because I hate to say this out loud, but internally I was like, dude, grow up. Like, you are so oversensitive. That should not bother you, right? And then finally, after I heard this so many times, it was like God had to whack me over the head. And it was like, wait a minute. The reason that I am saying that should not bother you is that it wouldn't bother me. Yeah. He's not me. He's wired very differently. And by the way, for those of us here who are people of faith, we can say he's wired very differently by a God who knew what he was doing, right? And so I asked this gentleman on the plane, I'm like, is there anything that your wife could have done differently where you would have received that differently? Like if she would have said something a little bit differently or whatever. And he looked at me like I was a bit nuts. And he's like, absolutely. Like if she just would have appreciated what I tried to do. Like if I missed the crumbs under the toaster, she can clean it later when I'm not looking. And I realized, oh my gosh, to men, what shouts out like a spotlight when she's re-cleaning all the countertops is it's almost in his mind, just so you know, ladies, it's in his mind, it's like I am making a point of saying that what you did on the outside wasn't good enough and that you failed. And again, painful message that we have no idea that we're sending. I mean, anyway, so that's just one example. There's so many different examples of this. And here's the thing for the men in the room, you need to know, I promise you, as women, the vast majority of the time, we are not trying to make a point that you failed. We are just trying to help. Like, I promise. I had one woman who came up to me after an event in Florida when I was talking about this. She was like, they are going to put on my tombstone. She was just trying to help. Like, I mean, but truly, like, we just think we're trying to help. We don't see it as I'm making a point that you failed. But I know for the guys in the room, many of you feel that that's the point that's being made. Okay, so we have to switch. Because one of the fun things is not just, how do you avoid the negative? Because that's obviously a big deal. But what is it that you can say on the positive side, like to try to build your man up in the way that he's concerned about? What?
Can I share something?
Oh, dear. I know what you're going to say.
So the beauty of being married to Shanti that as she is learning these things from interviewing men or whatever, she tests them out on the person closest to her. So as she's learning, hearing what men are describing about their lives and thoughts and all that stuff, and how important it is to feel kind of admired or appreciated.
Or respected.
All of that. So she decided that, you know, I love it when Jeff says, I love you. What can I say to him that kind of has that same level of impact? So for about a 2-week period there, she would come up to me at random times in the day and go, you know, Jeff, I so respect you. Okay. That's good to know. And this just happened, you know, multiple times. And finally, after 2 weeks, I had to go, hey, pal, can we just do a timeout on this one? I get what you're trying to do, what you're trying to find equivalent words for I love you that would work the same way for me. What I can tell you is it's not those words. I don't know what words will work, but it is definitely not those. So she, like a dog with a bone,
which is my personality, in case you haven't noticed,
began to work and to try to figure out what would be the words that would kind of signal that same kind of feeling.
Emotional feeling in a guy.
That I love you does in a woman.
Yep.
And she went after this for years.
It's about 6 years.
About six. Okay.
Yep. It was about 6 years. And we finally found it in the study we were talking about last night, actually, of the happiest marriages. Now, we've been trying to get this word out there for about 10 years now, so you might have heard this, but I want to ask you to guess.
The women.
And only the women. The guys can't guess. For the women to guess, it is a small phrase that you can say to your husband and has the same emotional impact that I love you tends to have on a wife. Can anybody guess what that phrase is? I appreciate you is good. Absolutely, it's good. Keep going. You're my hero. You're my hero is good. I thought I heard somebody say it. Thank you. We were speaking at this church in San Diego, this huge church. It was about 1,500 people in this auditorium. And when I asked this question, somebody yelled out from the back row, let's have sex.
Which will work. It just didn't come out on the survey.
It wasn't the one that came out on the survey. No, but believe it or not, ladies, it's thank you. And thank you, it is saying thank you for the littlest day-to-day things. It's like, you know, thank you so much for noticing that my car was almost out of gas and putting gas in the car. Or thank you that, you know, the kids were being so loud and I couldn't hear myself think on that Zoom call. Thanks for taking them out and playing with them. You're such a good dad. Like these little day-to-day things, like thanks for doing the dishes, like whatever it is, these little day-to-day things, when you say thank you, it has this unusual emotional impact on most men. And if you think about it, it's because when we say these things to each other, like when he says, I love you to you, you know how it doesn't just say one thing. It's not just that he's saying, I have affection for you. It's saying a whole host of things. Like hearing I love you, it's like, yes, I have affection for you, but also it's saying you're mine. It's also him saying, I'm so glad you married me. It's also him saying, I would choose you all over again. It's like it. All this stuff is wrapped up emotionally in hearing, I love you. Well, it's the same thing for a guy when you say thank you. Because the first thing it says is, you know that thing you did on the outside? I noticed it. That's the first thing it says. And it was good. And I appreciate it. Like it says all these things that his heart is just longing to hear. And it's because there's so much of that insecurity and self-doubt on the inside.
And trust me, ladies, try this. It works. And you know, maybe for your husband.
Assuming he's in the, whatever, 82%. Right. I can't remember what the number of men
and
was.
Maybe he thank you doesn't work for him. You know, whatever. You can find things that you can affirm him in these areas. For example, I grew up, I was a kid in the 70s. And I used to love to read the comics in the back of the newspapers. Remember newspapers? Anyways, and my favorite comic strip was Peanuts, Charles Schulz. And so Shanti knew that and everything. And from time to time, when I perhaps am struggling with something or I've done something that was hard but got it done, she will say these words to me. She'll go, "You're a good man, Charlie Brown." And it sounds silly, but it does something inside of me. And I will run through a wall for her because she believes in me. And if you will show your husband that you do believe in him and that you trust him and that you understand these things that he needs, he will do extraordinary things for you because of that feeling of feeling like you're the best thing ever.
Now, here's the thing. This is really important to mention. Because one of the things that is so common is that especially when you've gotten into a challenging place in your relationship, it's like, well, I don't know that I appreciate him.
Right.
I don't know. I'm not feeling that right now. Here is what we found. And this is across several different research projects, including the Kindness Challenge Research Project that we were talking about last night, and the jointhekindnesschallenge.com website that I mentioned, which has a lot of tools there if you're interested. Here's one of the things that we found, is that especially when you're hurt, there is a neuroscience principle that works both on the positive side and on the negative side. The neuroscience principle, write this down, is what you focus on is what you will see. What you focus on is what you will see. And there's a whole bunch of stuff behind this that we don't have time to get into, but the bottom line is I guarantee that even if you're in a place of, I don't know that I appreciate him, guess what? There are things that you can appreciate. Maybe I should tell them that.
There is a person, you got to tell them about Helen.
Henry.
And her name might have been Helen.
Yeah, I don't know. So when I was doing the research for the 30-Day Kindness Challenge, because the whole point, obviously, is to try to not just make a good relationship better, but really the beauty of it and the where it works the best is when there's a difficult relationship that you want to improve. And so, like I said last night, you're doing those three things. You're not saying anything negative. You're finding and saying the positive. And you're doing a small action of kindness or generosity every day. Okay, so those are the three things. And by the way, you know what? Since we have the slide, hold on. I'm going to just go backwards. I'm going to put that up there because we actually had. Come on. Sorry, there was a bunch of slides. I'm going to actually put the kindness challenge slide up. Wow, this is really taking a while. My apologies. There we go. Okay, so you can take a picture of that if you wanted. And here is what we found as we were doing this, is because of the principle of what you focus on is what you'll see, that people in difficult relationships, as they started, they had to look for things to praise every day. And so it started to change what they saw. So this example that Jeff is talking about is this one woman in our study group comes up to me, and at the beginning, she's like, look, I can be that positive thing, like not saying anything negative. I can keep my mouth shut and not say anything negative. I can do that. But as for that number two, find something to praise and appreciate, you don't know Henry. And I'm like, okay. And she said, so here's what I'm going to do. And she had this little notebook in her purse. And she said, see this little notebook, little moleskin or skin notebook or whatever. And she said, I have this with me so that if I see anything that is worth praising that he does, I'll write it down. And maybe if I see a couple things, that way I can bank them for the next day. And I'm thinking, oh, dear. Okay, so So she's like, so I'm going to carry this around with me and I'll write them down. And I'm like, okay, great. So 2 weeks later, she comes up to me again and she's like,
she looks like a different woman.
She looked like a different person. It was crazy. Like her facial expression, her countenance were just so different. And she's like, you're not going to believe what happened. And I'm thinking, yeah, I probably would actually. And she said, on day one, and she showed me the notebook, and it said day one, he held the door for me at church and he mowed the lawn. So I said, thank you for the door. And I was going to hold the lawn for the next day. I'm serious, right? So, and she said, but look at day two. And day two had 5 things on it. Day 3 had 11 things on it. And she said, I never used my bank. Like, I had no idea that, yes, there were real issues in his life and in our relationship, but there were also all these amazing things that I wasn't seeing or appreciating. And that's how they found their way back, was kind of recognizing that.
Can we, before we transition, can we...
Can we give the
advice to the guys that 2 weeks from now, when your wife starts saying these things, noticing things, or saying thank you, your tendency may be she's only doing that because Shanti told her to.
Yeah.
She doesn't really mean it.
Yeah.
And what do you always say?
We always, the issue is that it is easy to say, oh, you know, this is so insincere or whatever. That's what you think. And the reality is, guys, no, this is how we feel about you. It's just that we didn't know this mattered. And those words, thank you, for example, or how, looking for things to appreciate and saying it out loud, like, those things just don't make it out of our mouths.
You're thinking it.
We're thinking it. We don't realize that we're not saying it. So that 30-day kindness challenge initiative, one of the things we found in the pre and the post surveys is the average person on the pre survey before they started, we asked them, because again, you're doing it for one person the first time, just one. And we said, okay, for your person, how often do you say something affirming? And I think the majority of people were doing it for a spouse, right? And so they were like, you know, on average, I say something affirming 2 to 3 times a day. Like, that's kind of what the average guess was. Then they actually had to start tracking it in order to know if they were doing the 30-day kindness challenge well or not. And what they actually found is that it was more like 2 to 3 times a week. We have all these appreciative thoughts. We just don't realize they're not making it out of our mouths. And that's both men and women. This is not just women. It's just we don't realize that we don't say these things as often as we think we do. So can I give you an example of something like the impact of this? I know we have...
Okay.
20 minutes or so. Mm-hmm. But literally, I had just gotten the data back. We hadn't, on when we'd found this thank you, how much it matters, we hadn't written the book, like hadn't done anything. Literally, I had just gotten the survey data back. And I was so excited about having finally, after 6 years, figured out the thank you thing, that I was speaking at this big women's event in Wisconsin. And as I'm explaining the thank you thing, this woman, front and center, kind of like where you guys are, as I'm saying this, she pops up and she marches out the door. And I'm like, oh, gosh, you know, because sometimes things I say, it hits a nerve or somebody gets offended. And it's like, bummer, you know. She comes up to me at the book table after the session, and her eyes are so red. And it turns out she hadn't been offended. She'd been convicted. And she said, I realize I never think to say thank you. And she described that very morning on the way to the women's conference. She said, I passed my husband. He was up on a ladder in the living room, putting up a light fixture, fixing something. And she's like, he'd been up there up and down and up and down for a couple of hours, and he was sweating. And she was like, it was probably a 5 curse word job, like one of those, like really difficult. And he so, and she said, it didn't even occur to me to say thank you. She's like, I just waltzed by him on the way to the women's conference and said, bye, honey. And she said, I was so convicted. She's like, I ran out into the lobby while you were talking, and I texted him. And I said, thank you so much for doing that. I forgot to say that when I left. I really appreciate it. You know how much I've been wanting to get that thing fixed. Thank you for taking care of that. I'll see you later. And she pressed send, okay? So she comes up to me about 5 minutes later, and she goes, and she shows me the text string back from her husband. And it says, who are you, and what have you done with my wife? and she's like, I think I need to work on this. And I told her, honestly, we all need to work on this, because it doesn't necessarily come naturally. So
before we switch over, I want to help the women understand kind of another illustration of what's going on inside of a lot of guys. So when we're talking to guys, and we've done this, we've had these interviews and these questions with guys all over the world, and it's this isn't just, you know,
this
upper
isn't just
middle Ameri- class
this isn't just
America.
Americans. Yes.
No, it isn't. It's all over. And what we'd find is
can I just say that it turns out, ladies, when we start to see data from Mexico and Singapore and England and, you know, whatever, men are men all over the world. Apparently, like the male brain is the male brain all over. So,
and the oftentimes they'd use kind of illustrations to try to describe what it feels like to be a guy at times. And we'd oftentimes hear kind of the same word picture. And this word picture that I'm going to ask you to share was used multiple times. And it's really fascinating. And I think it's really helpful for the women to hear.
I think it's important, actually, because it explains something internal. So the word picture that multiple men used, I'll tell you the way one guy put it. He said, what is it? Because it was always, what does it feel like to be a guy? Right. Like, that's one of the questions that I would ask. And he said, you know how when you were 5 or 6 years old, you were like kindergarten, first grade, and you had craft class? Like, remember craft class? And he said, you know how you would, like, make an ashtray in craft class? Okay, for the people who are under 35, we made ashtrays in craft class.
It's how we showed our parents we loved them.
The younger people are like, what? Like, I promise, yes.
We
no,
made
like,
ashtrays.
Today it's pencil pots or whatever. But you know, the way this guy put it is he said, you know how, like, you're 6 years old, like the color is all runny and it's all misshapen and it's wonky on one side, you know. And he said, but as I am bringing home this thing that I've done and I am getting ready to present it to the most important woman in my life, everything in me, my heart is just beating wildly, and everything in me is hoping, as I'm getting ready to hold it up for her inspection of this thing that I've done, that she's going to take it and go, oh, buddy, great job, as opposed to it's all wonky on one side. And he said, this guy said, I know it sounds crazy, but we're still in some ways just those little boys inside, and we're holding up for inspection the most important woman in our life, this thing we've done, just hoping that we can make her happy. And I think for us as women, here's the thing, we look at these strong, confident looking men, and we have no idea that that's just a mask. And that on the inside, there's all this self-doubt. And that's the man we have to speak to. We have to speak to that inner man, rather than being fooled that what he presents on the outside is how he feels about himself. So I need to move on to the next topic, if that's okay, because I just I really love being able to help with another really practical topic. Okay, so second topic that is also particularly important. So one guy, as we were talking about this, and we were talking about one of the things that hits that nerve as well, because like, you know how I was talking about the things that say, I think what you did is inadequate? One of the ways that we do that surprises a lot of us as women. It sure surprised me. I was asking this one gentleman, you know, what is it that hits that nerve? And he said, look, anytime anyone, really, but especially my wife, he said, anytime somebody starts a sentence with, why did you do that choice? Why did you make that decision? He said, in my mind, just add on the end of the sentence a comma, you dodo. Why did you do that, you dodo? And he's like, and I'm like, that's not what we're saying. He was like, no, but that's what we're hearing. And I said, okay, so you're going to have to help me because if I need to ask why, I need to ask why, right? So what do I say instead? And he looked at me like the answer should be so obvious. And he goes, how different would it be if you said, look, I know you had a reason for that. Can you help me understand what it is? Same question, right? And as he said that, I realized, oh my gosh, sometimes I am saying you dodo, right? How many times, I'm not going to ask for a show of hands, ladies. How many times have some of us as women something that our husband does and we're like, what was he thinking? And we need to realize the translation of that is he wasn't thinking. And so here's a big sort of aha for a lot of us, that this is sort of topic number two. Just so you know, guys think about everything. They just do it differently than we do. Because for us as women, if we are thinking through something, you tend to know about it, okay? And that is not being offensive. I see some women going, whoa. That is not being offensive. Literally, that is the way that most female brains are wired. Our brains tend, not always, but tend to be wired to process through something, think through something by talking it through. The verbal centers are connected to so many more centers of the brain. It's all very interesting. Men's brains, it turns out, are exactly the opposite. It is astounding that the human race survived, if you think about it. I mean, really. The male brain is far more likely to be wired where it is actively difficult for them to think something through while they're talking it through. And so men tend to go underground. And they tend to process internally rather than externally. And as they process internally, assuming that this is them, this I can't remember the numbers, but again, it's usually in that 75% range. For most men, as they process internally, the guys described it as like a chess match almost. Like, you know how in chess you have to think a few steps ahead and like all sorts of things? And so the guys described it as thinking kind of like, well, if I do this, then this thing has to happen over there. But then if that happens, I need to do this thing over here. And so the men will do this internal process on whatever it is, sometimes for days, and it pops out the other end as a decision. And he goes, I think we should do this. Now, for us as women, we think this is the beginning of the conversation. And so we're like, well, I don't know. What about this thing over here? And the guy is thinking, I spent 3 days thinking about this. It's like, we didn't know. And so, ladies, here's how it works out in practice, is that so often when we want to go, what was he thinking? If you will just force yourself, at least at the beginning, to stop and tell yourself, Shanti promises me he probably has a reason for this. And instead, what were you thinking? Why did you do that? Instead say, I know you had a reason for that. Can you help me understand what it is? It's the same question, but it assumes he has a reason I'm not there yet. And, you know, help me understand. And it's automatically, did you notice, per our last topic, it's automatically a more appreciative, respectful way of asking the same exact question.
Now, one of the things that I'm one of those internal processors. And so, and I'm also, I use a whole lot fewer words than Shanti does.
As you can tell.
So when I say something, it's kind of, I've thought it through, and it's my kind of
decision,
conclusion of what needs to happen, all of that. And then I assume that when Shanti says something, that same process has taken place. And if she's saying something, I'm thinking that it's her final decision. And so if we're not on the same page, I'm like, okay, this is game on. You know, it's like this is an argument now ready to happen.
And I'm like, why are you getting so upset? Like,
because I'm just talking. I'm asking a question. But I'm this.
You're hearing it as criticism.
I'm hearing it as a final decision on her part, the same way it kind of is for me. Whereas she has learned, and, you know, this has done wonders. And it's a simple little thing, but it's done wonders in our relationship. She'll say, oh, okay, can I think out loud for a minute and kind of talk this through and process myself? And it's like, okay, what she's going to say next isn't her final decision.
And I'm not contradicting. I'm not contradicting.
Exactly.
You.
It's just her getting to the position to see that I was right. In the no, it's her getting, and both of us getting to the decision of whatever it is.
And so, but here's the thing, there's no way around the fact that if we really are different people in many ways, and some of that is just personality, some of that is how we were raised, some of that really is nurture, not nature, but some of it is nature. Right? Like if you have two different processing styles, that is probably a brain wiring thing. And so if we really are different in some of these ways, it is going to come out in not just you process things differently, but you truly have different priorities, different perspectives on how things should work. Like we did a whole study on not just the sex topic, but the money topic, you know, how things should work around money in marriage, like all of that, there really are some of those differences. And so let me just tell for the women in the room, and then we'll talk about it on the other side for the men to understand the women. But for us as women, we need to recognize that it is highly likely that there are going to be areas where he is going to come to a different decision because as a guy, literally as a guy, he is going to value certain things differently than we would. And so let me give you an example. So because this is both a processing thing and a value something differently thing. So when our daughter was 18 months old, maybe-ish,
okay, little. I think I know where you're going with this.
So she was little, and I was working on a deadline. And so Jeff had been sort of dad, you know, doing everything for a couple of weeks. And he had her one day on a Saturday out at the playground, which is right next to our house, and had her on the swings or whatever. And I'm sitting there in my home office, and I'm working on this deadline. And then all of a sudden, I hear this shrieking. I'm like, what's going on? And so I go running outside the house and go running to the playground. And I see Jeff pushing our toddler on the swing so hard that it looked like she was going to go around the bar. And she wasn't in a safety seat, right? She's just in a normal swing.
She's an adventurer.
And she wasn't, it turns out she wasn't shrieking, she was squealing. She was squealing with delight. She was loving this. But I'm like seeing all the things that could go wrong. And so I literally started to run up to the playground shouting, what are you doing? Right? Like, what are you thinking? Right? What are you doing? And I will tell the women in the room, I swear to you, it felt like the Holy Spirit did this. Right? Like grabbed the back of my collar and said, stop, wait, before you do what you want to do, which is to run up and snatch her away from him. Think about it for just a second. Like, he loves his daughter. He doesn't want her to die. So are you going to trust him or not? Whew. And I literally, in that moment, I had to go, oh my gosh, everything in me wanted to do, which is to grab her away. What are you thinking? What are you doing? You're like protecting the baby and not acknowledging he loves her. He's a grown man. He's smart. He doesn't want her to die. Like, he's thought this through. He's seen how it works. If I didn't acknowledge that, and if I grabbed her away, is he ever going to take her to the playground again?
Not while you were there.
And so this is one of the most important things for us to recognize, is that in those areas where we have differences of perceptions about how things should work, and if we insist on our way. Now, this works in both ways, right? But when we insist on it has to be done a certain way, because we're just not acknowledging that this person is a smart person, they are allowed to have a legitimately different opinion about something, then what happens with most men, again, this is not all, but most men do this. You do your thing. I just won't do it, because the feeling of being told what you did on the outside wasn't good enough, you really failed, is so painful that it's better to just avoid it. And so they back off. And so for us, if we recognize that dynamic, we have to sort of be willing to have a conversation about that and say, I didn't realize that this was so painful.
Well, this oftentimes, and we've heard this question in the Q&A, and I haven't seen the Q&A, so I don't know if this question is there, but it's oftentimes, my husband won't lead. I
yes.
want him to lead, but he won't. And in some instances, I'm not saying in all.
Certainly not in all.
But
or like spiritually, especially. Like, I want him to
the
be
guy
the spiritual
going,
leader.
You know, I tried. It apparently wasn't
what
the way
she
you
wanted.
Wanted me to, how you wanted me to lead. So therefore, you know, have at it.
Yeah. Like I will tell you, for Jeff with the kids, he is a great dad. And I almost became really dissatisfied, because his way of spiritual leadership, I'm like, he doesn't do family devotions. He doesn't gather our family every morning and pray before the kids go to school. He doesn't do this, he doesn't do that. Well, what he does do is he'll talk to them as he, you know, like the Bible says, as you walk along the road. Like, you go through the little things. Hey, what do you think God would say about that? Like, in the middle of the day, he prays for them before bedtime. And that is spiritual leadership. It just wasn't what I envisioned. And so it got to the point where thankfully this research kind of intersected and interrupted my natural dissatisfaction process. But that's an example of, again, what you focus on is what you'll see. Back to that principle. And let me just close, because we got to get you guys to a break. Let me just close with this example about parenting. So, like the swing set example. In every culture around the world, researchers have found that a father will let a toddler child get 3 times further away from them than a mom will, okay? And I mean, literally, like, for us as women, we are more likely to be like, no, honey, okay, oh, oopsie, okay, like, you know, like following them around and protecting them, where the dad is far more likely to be like, go! Fly. Like, if you skin your knees, suck it up and get up and keep going. And we give lip service to the fact that kids need both, and they do, but we have to let our husband be the dad that he wants to be. Now, obviously, this is not saying you can't talk about things or whatever. No, this is just so you are aware that of something that you may not have been aware of before, which is how easy it is to tell him he's not being a good dad, or he's not being a good provider, or he's not whatever, all the insecurities in the, under the surface, so that we can look at those things and then focus on the good ones and pull them out.